are listening to Wells Tech, episode 630, recorded for June 20th, 2020. Productivity that lasts. Wells Tech is a podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we actually review a blog post entitled Seven Rules for Staying Productive Long Term. Kind of an interesting angle on productivity and how it maybe is a keeper for you in your productivity suite. We have some picks in our somewhat abbreviated summer series. Sally talks about Google Teacher podcast, and I talk about some hardware networking equipment that I've now installed in my house. It's actually some great community feedback, a video of the week. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 630, and we're recording this on Tuesday, June 2nd, 2020. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you today?
I am just great. I'm celebrating the beginning of summer. Who cares if the calendar says it's June 20th that rolls around? For me, it's June 2nd because we're doing a summer show today.
Summer show, which means yes. A little shorter, a little lighter, perhaps. When we were doing some planning for the show and this series, we thought, well, should we just have a COVID-free show?
But you said the word.
I know. I don't know how else to talk about it.
Not talk about it.
That's right. So we decided not to talk about it.
That's right.
We're talking about it anyway. There are plenty of things to talk about in the world of tech and ministry, which is what this show is all about. And one of those things that seems to come around quite often when you talk about technology is productivity. With a lot of people trying to figure out how best to use their computers in these times, it's timely as well.
It is, and probably a good time of year to kind of reorganize yourself as well. Mm-hmm. Typically, even though we aren't all teachers and have a bit of a summer break, summer does change schedules. People aren't in the office as much. Maybe even from a ministry perspective, it's a time for planning and getting ready for a new church year, a new school year, all those different things. Just a kind of time to clean up your act, reorganize, think about how you can do things better, perhaps, or getting to those things that you always wanted to get to and you never find time for. And so, and wonderful. Resource for this show is came to us from Pastor Peter Hagen, so I have to give him a shout out right away, in that he must be thinking about planning and summertime as well, because he sent us an article called Seven Rules for Staying Productive Long Term. So a lot of times people are willing to pump you up and give you ideas for being productive, ideas, systems, tools, all those things. But this article is really interesting because it's looking at staying productive, not just getting started, but keeping the ball rolling once you are started.
And there are several keys to that, as I think probably all of us know, that it's easy to start, but for some reason, some of these things just get sidetracked, and it's difficult to stay on track, and we fall off the bandwagon, and then we try something else, and we read another book, and you know, it's one thing after another, and before you know it, we're back to where we started, and we feel guilty that we haven't used our resources, and then we start all over again. So this article was kind of aimed at us in that respect, and asked some tough questions.
Yeah, and I think probably for me, one of the things that gets me off track more than anything else is that things change over time. So what maybe was a great system for me a year ago might need some tweaking. And, you know, now's a good time to do those kind of things. But again, the article is titled Seven Rules. And so there are actually seven things listed in the article, all of which were pretty thought-provoking. And I guess we can just kind of talk through those points. The first says that your system needs to fit your work. And so it's not about
the other way around.
Right. Picking a beautiful system or having a shiny new tool. It's more about how you do your work, how you process things, the pace that you do your work. So someone who's handling, for instance, a lot of help requests or things like that, maybe needs a different system to keep up with a fast-paced input from people and make sure they're not letting things slip through the cracks, as opposed to someone who's maybe planning their school year or their church year, and you know the certain lessons you need to teach or the parts of the church year that are coming up. You have specific dates and guidelines to go within, and that might lend itself to a completely different system. So know what you're trying to do and make your system choices fit that.
Rule number two, the system should counterbalance your worst tendencies.
I don't have any of those.
You don't really need this rule, but right. I do, because the issue is that there are some systems that play to your strengths and some that play to your weaknesses. They talk about fixed schedule productivity and something called deep work. And I read, I'm going to read, actually, it's on my reading list, called, I think it's called Deep Work, where it talks about how to get into that distractions-free zone and get really productive for periods of time. And some systems do a better job at that, and others are more for, like we talked about in Rule 1, you know, quick task switching. So you have things like Pomodoro, which I think you've talked about before, that help you work in chunks versus other systems that use other approaches to this particular rule.
Yeah, I think prioritization, knowing what's best next, which happens to be the name of a book we read once together on productivity. I'm constantly asking myself that, and you know, having a system that can help me decide that, so it kind of takes the burden off of me, that bad tendency to second guess myself, that I'm not, you know, that I'm ignoring some high priority. So, you know, finding the right system that'll help me do those kind of things, make those decisions, is a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think of maybe a teacher who has during the school year just has smaller chunks of time. Maybe they have a class period or less, you know, to get stuff done, or before school or after school, where it's not a 3 or 4 hour time frame. It's not an afternoon. It's not a morning. You know, some systems are going to fit that approach better than others. So interesting. What's number three?
The system needs a way of dealing with exceptions. And I feel like I'm living an exception these days, but having a system that's flexible enough to, you know, stop and change gears when needed if something outside the box comes about. So, you know, you can't be so rigid that the system dictates to you other things when something obviously needs attention.
Yeah, I thought of pastors when I read this rule. One of the paragraphs says, for instance, let's say you're a writer, and pastors are essentially writers. You have a bunch of tasks, as far as a sermon is concerned. You have a bunch of tasks on your plate for the day, but all of a sudden you get a really good idea for an essay. You should probably start writing now, or you lose your train of thought. What should you do? And they say, well, there's no correct answer, but sometimes you have to roll with the punches, as they say, and the time is right, then dive into it. A lot of it has to do with how you're feeling, you know, what frame of mind you're in, how much energy you have, you know, the kind of the context of things. So you do have to be flexible, and that's what this rule is all about.
Yeah, and ultimately at the end of this section, it says these being able to make these numerous slight exceptions will ultimately become part of the system itself, so that you have a way of dealing with that kind of thing when it comes up.
Mm-hmm. Rule number four, a good productivity system shouldn't feel productive.
I thought this one was kind of Lutheran. Like, we're not going to focus on our feelings or our emotions.
Right.
Feelings are just kind of relative, and they're not a great measure. But what is a great measure is getting things done, checking mm-hmm. things off the list or whatever. And that's where you're going to be confident that your system is working for you.
Right. Part of this also is you get more wrapped up in the productivity system than you do in getting the work done as well. You feel good about your system, but at the end of the day, it's really not about the system. It's about the job, about the work. So,
does writing things down in order to check them off, like after you've done them, does that fall in that category?
I don't think that's a wrong thing.
Okay.
I think there is some psychological benefit, at least, to that. So
good.
It's not feelings. That's a deeper thing. You want to do rule number five, Sally?
Yeah, it says if your work changes, your system should too. I think I alluded to this one already, that we're kind of living in an exception. The exception becomes your standard, then you've got to change your system to accommodate whatever new roles your direction. If I were to look back, Martin, over, I don't know even how long now, 16 plus years of working for the Synod, when I started as the Wells.net help desk person, and I did training, and I've done, you know, just a variety of things along the way, including podcasting. And, you know, over time, responsibilities and job roles and to-do lists change, and you need different systems when that happens at times. So make sure that you're, you know, sensitive to the fact that one size doesn't fit all as your responsibilities change.
Yep. Number six, always measure against your baseline, not somebody else's. And this is kind of an easy trap to fall into, especially when you're reading productivity books, because obviously they're written by people who have certain gifts and skills and objectives and goals. And that's not always a beneficial thing to say, well, they're doing it right, I'm doing it wrong. There's nothing wrong with you doing you and doing it in a way that fits, like the other rules say, your work style and your personality and your objectives. So I think the better comparison is to measure against yourself over time. So if you're beginning a system, track, you know, your productivity and then measure against yourself 6 months, in the future, a year, and see how it's going. It's always good to evaluate how it's going. It's not that you shouldn't measure yourself. It's just measure yourself against yourself and see if there's upward movement.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of that concept of the Instagram life, that everybody's posting their best self out mm-hmm. there on social media and things. And that's what you're going to hear from the productivity types as well. My inbox is always zero, whatever. And that's just not worth going there. It's not
right.
Who you are. It's who they are. And maybe it's not even true. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, keep it real. All right. Last rule, to live by, a system cannot give your work meaning or motivation. And I think that's totally true. Your system's just there to support you and help you organize and prioritize and get things done. But it's certainly not going to affect the type of work that you're doing. You got to look to your own responsibilities and find that motivation.
Yeah, I like the last paragraph here. Productivity systems work better the more natural enthusiasm you have. They work like a lens, magnifying and directing the diffuse energy you already possess. The people, therefore, that tend to succeed with productivity systems already have a meaning and drive for their work. They have ambitions and recognize that getting things done efficiently is necessary for reaching them. And that really describes, I think, probably all of our listeners, as they're seeking not necessarily ambitions, but good stewardship. They have responsibilities, God-given responsibilities, and they want to execute on those as God wills. And productivity systems are tools just tools to make that happen.
So
good stuff.
Yeah, very good. Martin, what's your favorite productivity tool that's working for you right now?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot. I've really been focusing a lot on OneNote these days because I've just begun to appreciate again and again how much it can do, what it can capture both in my professional and personal life, mm-hmm. where you can throw anything in there in any structure, documents, outlines, audio files, PDFs, and then you can tag and find it. And that's really the power of it, that you can find stuff that you throw in there. So, and it makes it's a little one less thing you have to think about when you want to capture something. You don't always have to think about the tool that you're going to capture, because this is the one that I use to capture, and I just go there and throw it in there. So that's mine. How about you?
Well, you know, that's interesting. You kind of answered my second question of you before I answer what you asked of me, and that do you use it for work and for home, basically? And you're mm-hmm. telling me that OneNote is the go-to tool for your whole life. Is mm-hmm. what I'm hearing.
Yeah, it's not the only tool, of course, but I think it's the one that I prefer. We obviously, and have talked many times about Trello, and maybe that's your answer, that you know, we have to live in there to communicate and to track projects. But I would say my go-to capture and productivity sweet spot is probably OneNote.
And that's where we differ, because I guess I admire the fact that you have one place to go across all your life, because I really mm-hmm. do have it segmented between work and personal for myself personally. I still am a big fan of just writing things down in a paper planner. I use that specifically for work to track week to week, kind of bullet yep. journal style, like we've talked about in the past. Not just my appointments, but also my to-do list and things. So kind of a combination calendar and to-do in paper format. And certainly Trello is my brain on the work side. I have not fallen in love with OneNote to the level that you have, but I use it because I have to, kind
love,
of thing.
It's a friend. It's a good friend.
Yeah. On my personal side, I still struggle. And I'm mm-hmm. kind of diverse. Probably one of the big things I do personally is Bible journaling. And I just do that in a separate system by itself. Mm-hmm. And I also am using an iPad for some productivity purposes as well, using GoodNotes specifically on the iPad. So it's an ever-evolving landscape for me. But it's definitely not crossing my two lives, my work and my home. And that's sometimes a challenge to not have one system.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it's nice that these tools, whatever these digital tools at least, can cross over if you want them to, and cross devices. So they can be on different devices and still have access to them, which is
some of them nice. Can. Actually, the one you chose can. OneNote is very versatile that way. Unfortunately, GoodNotes is not.
That's true, man.
And so that's a hard line there to adopt uh-huh. a system that doesn't cross, and that's
one reason. Yeah, then that's why I do journaling as well, versus the day journaling I do, and that's all in OneNote, so it doesn't really matter mm-hmm. what the platform is. So
maybe that's something.
Sally, another thing to think about before we leave this topic is, you know, summer is a good time for kind of taking a look at your digital life and your digital content. And maybe do a little summer cleaning. And there's lots of tools out there to do that. I don't know if that's on your summer bucket list, but that's definitely something I've been working on. I recently upgraded my Windows computer laptop, and that was a good opportunity to do a little house cleaning, file management. And I have kind of a new appreciation for the File Explorer within Windows. I had primarily used a Mac over the years, but I'm leaning more and more towards Windows at this point, and it's I've been very impressed with what File Explorer does and some of the features there and the ways to slice and dice and It's come a long way, so I'm really happy with that tool, and that's really helped or enabled me to do some file cleanup as well.
Yeah, for me, my email tends to get pretty weighty. I save pretty much everything, and I do subscribe to that Inbox Zero, so I'm constantly, you know, being diligent about filing things away.
Getting it out of the inbox, right?
Right, and that becomes just a black hole, just like, yeah, that folder can hold more, sure. And, you know, things do go into archive. Outlook has an archive feature.
It's a little bit of a false sense of security, you know.
Right, but at some point, that email from, you know, some obscure conversation that I had 3.5 months ago really isn't needed anymore. So that's a good...
You never know.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to pull it out if you do need it. So at some point, maybe 5-year-old emails or something, I have to draw a line and delete some of that history so that it doesn't just add up infinitum. Google gives us a nice feature if you use Google Photos. They actually suggest archiving different things to help free up space if you're just using the free plan of Google storage. I think it has like a 17 gig limit or something. And so they'll even suggest to you things that look like boring photos of text or whatever, you know, they'll say, do you want to archive these? Every once in a while, I'll get those messages, but you certainly can pick any photos you want to send to archive in Google Photos as well.
And then maybe the last thing, well, a couple other things, passwords. I know I use LastPass, as do you, and I think a lot of our listeners use or should be using, in my opinion, a password management tool that generates secure passwords so that you've got different passwords for every site. Because of the many sites that we use, that means there's a lot of passwords, and some of them you put in there because you're trying out a site or whatever, so you don't know if you're going to return. And many times you don't come back to a site, and it's a little moldy in there, and it's very difficult to kind of sort through that. And so I would almost recommend going through that on a, if not annual, you know, maybe even more frequent basis to kind of keep things neat and tidy, put them in folders. A lot of these password managers have folders that you can put things in, and especially if you're sharing passwords with a spouse or a team member, it's good to kind of keep those things nice and tidy and up to date.
Definitely. Good advice, Martin. And maybe even consider changing a few of those passwords. I think LastPass has a utility that will run that will tell you, you know, if passwords are reused or are particularly old or whatever, then you can go ahead and go through that lovely, painful step of changing your password as well.
Yep.
So, good thoughts.
Maybe one last item, Sally, and this would be for any of you that manage church or school databases. Now is the time, probably summer, to take some time and clean those up as well. Sometimes the best way to do that is to find some good reports that you can spit out of those databases just to do a little bit of an audit and see what's in the database rather than just kind of paging through page after page or screen after screen. Those reports might come in handy.
Yep, things get old there as well. Maybe people have moved on or you've lost contact, and it's probably good to keep things cleaned up.
Mm-hmm. So if you've got some productivity items that you're going to tackle this summer and would like to share those, please feel free to do that. We'd love to include those maybe in our next show. So just go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, and you can leave a comment on this show if you want. You can email us, wellstech@wells.net. You can visit many of the traditional social networks. We're everywhere, including Pinterest. It's out there.
Yep, your favorite.
All right, let's move on. This is an abbreviated show. So we dispense with a few items, but we never dispense with our picks of the week. Sally, you have a pick this week?
I do. I'd be lost without having a chance to share some good news, as some people say. And my pick this week has shifted gears as we've podcast, Martin, because I'm not going to mention that C-19 word at all, even though that was going to be part of my pick. We'll just delay that. And instead, I'm going to give a shout out to teacher Michael Vlieger, who teaches at Risen Savior in Mankato, Minnesota, who emailed us recently and said he wanted to shout out to the Google Teacher podcast. So much goodness in their last episode, episode 119. He can't pick just one thing to share from it. So, man, what a lead-in. I had to go listen to episode 119, and he's right. This is a great podcast, not just knowledgeable co-host, but also this particular podcast was kind of a community show where they played a lot of audio from listeners to the podcast who were sharing their different tips and things for Google teachers, and it's all over the board. You definitely will get something great out of this podcast. This episode's 38 minutes long. I would guess that's pretty typical of their shows, and they're in all kinds of podcast players, so you can find them like in Stitcher and iTunes and all the typical places. So, or you can just go to the website, which is googleteacherpodcast.com, and take a listen for yourself. So, I have added it to my podcast subscriptions and will be listening more in the future. I definitely thank you, Michael, for sending us that link.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Mm-hmm. All right, my pick of the week is a hardware pick. With people working in home offices a little bit more, sometimes the Wi-Fi is a challenging thing in a home that wasn't maybe made for a home office. So how do you improve that? Well, there are different routers you can buy and Wi-Fi networks, etc. But one little handy gadget I ran across is something that allows you to run a wired network over the coaxial cable that's already in your house, likely. So if you have a red cable in your house, or if it came with coax running to different rooms to allow you to run cable TV, you can actually use that coaxial cable with something called a bonded MoCA network adapter. MoCA stands for, I forget what it stands for. I'll have to find that in a minute.
Some kind of coffee reference.
Well. Yeah, it's MOCA, coax adapter, I think is the CA, and MOBA, I don't know what the MO stands for. Anyway, should have done a little bit more research. It's basically you get the kit, and it's two devices. They need power, and they have a coax connection, of course, and an Ethernet connection. So you can plug this into the router on one end through your Ethernet, and then you can run the coax side through. You have to find, obviously, where it starts and ends in your house. But then you can run it to essentially any room that you want if you can find the right cable down in the basement, which is what I have to do. And it really just self-configures itself. There's no software, essentially. You just plug it in, both ends, and you have essentially Ethernet running over your coaxial cable. And it is almost as fast. I won't say it's exactly as fast, but gigabit. You do get gigabit speed, which is awesome because you already have existing wiring. You don't have to run Ethernet yourself to get that speed into different parts of the house, and you have the stability of a wired connection. What I have in my house is a mesh routing system from Netgear called Orbi, and it has a base unit and it has a satellite unit. And one of the benefits of that system is that they talk to each other on their own private network, so it's not hogging the bandwidth that is necessary for your other devices. But if you actually can connect them via what I did with this MoCA network adapter, it acts. It basically gives you another hardwired access point, in my case, up in the office on the top floor. So runs about $150, something like that. So it's not super cheap, but it's definitely cheaper than going through your house with a drill and coax cable and poking holes in your walls.
Mm-hmm.
And this just it's just works. So highly recommended. This one, this particular one, there aren't too many companies that make this. Action Tech, you can get this at Best Buy or on Amazon. Works well if you want to bring high-speed internet directly to a gaming console or a TV or something, if your Wi-Fi is maybe a little bit sketchy. I did a little bit of review between this and the ones that run through your electrical system over your power outlets. And this gets far, far better ratings than that. This gets much more consistent speeds. And I can attest to it. I've been using it I'm using it right now, in fact. I think it's a viable option. So that's my pick of the week.
Excellent. Well, you know, with my productivity system, I can be flexible. I can handle exceptions, and I can even handle a to-do of searching Google for what the MOCA acronym stands for.
Oh, she's got it.
And so I have the answer for Inquiring Minds. It stands for Multimedia Over Coax Alliance.
There you go.
MOCA.
Yes. Thank you.
So
2.0 is the latest. So.
Very good.
Thanks for looking that up. It's not on Action Tech's product page, so...
Well, I'm checking it off my to-do list. I got that done for you. So
awesome. Thank you so much. Trusted by millions, it says. So
millions. Wow.
All right. Community feedback, Sally.
Sure. We had an interesting question from John Sankey. He wrote to us recently and said, our pastor was wondering about creating an app for our church. I remember an episode where you talked about why you switched from iOS Android app to a progressive web app, and he would appreciate it if he could get a link to that episode. Well, guess what? We couldn't find a specific link where we talked about switching from iOS to progressive. I remember us having conversations probably multiple times about the Wells mobile app in particular at wells.app. And Martin, you're the brains behind that app. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about progressive web apps.
Yeah, just real briefly, since this is a pretty lengthy topic, but it is essentially a website that can act like an app. So you have to build it in such a way with things called techie terms like service workers that allow you to do some stuff offline that give you capabilities for installing it on the home screen of your app. So if you actually go to wells.app, and everybody should, because you get great Wells content there, devotions, Bible readings, verses of the day, a brand new family devotion is there now. But it acts just like an app, and one of the advantages is you don't have to create an app and put it in an app store or the multiple app stores. You don't have to be an Android expert or iOS developer. You're just basically using web technologies, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Back in the day, when we used to have Wells Mobile, that's what we did. We created an Android app and an iOS app, and we submitted them to the store, and sometimes phones wouldn't like them because they were too old or for whatever reason, you know, didn't run them. Don't have those kinds of problems with a progressive web app. And it's so easy to update. You just update a website and it just kind of flows down the chain to the app that's installed and works on almost every device. So you can get them on Amazon Fire tablets and other non-standard apps that don't have app stores. So kind of nice.
Definitely. So thanks for the question. And hopefully that was a help, and definitely love to see a link. If you guys are running progressive web apps for your congregations or schools, send us a link and we can feature it on Wells Tech.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Next up, there's a group of Wells educators who are supporting one another during that C19 event that we aren't talking about on this podcast. Great Facebook group. And this really doesn't specifically have to do with C19 anyway, but they had a question recently about online plan book recommendations. So somebody just threw it out to the group. I think there's like 1,200 awesome Wells teachers in that group. So you're going to get some good feedback if you're part of that group and ask questions like this. And And what I thought was super cool was there were a variety of answers, but there was definitely one front runner that a lot of people said a lot of good things about, and that was planbook.com. And just some really positive feedback from the group and, you know, kind of sharing their experience with it. Someone named Susan Mislick said, if you choose PlanBook, my suggestion is to get it now or when your summer break begins and use the summer break to put in as many of your school year plans as possible, similar to making your block plans for the upcoming year. It will help you get used to the program before the craziness of a school year starts and will give you a major head start for the year. Also, when you put in your start and end dates for the school year, push that end date a whole month back. So if you think the school's going to end on May 21st, make it June 21st, just to give yourself some room. And then if you have to bump lessons and things push beyond the last scheduled day of school, the lessons at the end will drop off or be erased if you haven't, you know, extended that date. So you don't want to have to go back and rewrite all of that over again. So I thought that was a great tip that she shared, and we'd love to hear from others if they're using online plan books. Some of the others that were mentioned were Common Curriculum, planbookedu.com, so almost the same URL but with edu in there, and then Chalk Plan Board, which I know has a iOS and Android app associated, but also some of these may have fees associated and things like that, so check it out. Let us know what you're using.
Very good. Thanks to everybody who submitted feedback. We love to hear that stuff. So keep it coming this summer. Mm-hmm. Sally, let's close our show with a video of the week.
And I'll do a shout out this time to Staff Minister Brandon Steenbach, who shared a video that I just have fallen in love with. It's a hymn called He Is Worthy. And I want to say the author
is he
here.
Worthy?
I'm sorry.
Is he worthy or
it
he is worthy?
Is he worthy? It ends with he is worthy, and I just want to get to the good part at the very end, but okay, is he worthy is the name of the hymn.
Spoiler alert, yes.
Written by Andrew Peterson and Ben Shive, and it's performed by a congregation in Northwest Arkansas, the Fellowship Bible Church of Northwest Arkansas. This is one of those mashup videos where a lot of people are singing. I mean, a lot of people are involved in this, and it is so beautiful. I just hope you'll give it a listen and enjoy it yourself.
Very nice. Next time, we're going to return to a little talk about this thing we're experiencing now that shall not be named. but there is a lot of tech and ministry around that, and we've got a great interview coming to you about that as well. So stay tuned for that and so much more, and we really appreciate having you all join us. Please share it and let us know how we can get better and different topics that you maybe would want us to consider as well. Love all that kind of feedback. So thanks, everybody, and have a great day. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.